The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good afternoon. You're joining We the People Radio. Bill's standing up because he doesn't like the chair I picked.
No, I don't.
Yeah. I forgot you don't like that chair. Oh, my gosh. So my name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
And I'm Bob Martin.
And if we're not all together, we don't have all our components because Bill's the fun.
I need that other set of headphones there. These are malfunctioning.
Oh. Wow, you're just malfunctioning all over the place.
I know it.
What the heck?
Difficulties.
And without Bob, we don't have any good music, so. and everyone likes that part. That's their favorite part. You know, just in case you missed our program last week, I know we've done a bunch of shows about the VA, and last week's program was actually about good things that are happening at the VA. I just thought I'd give you a little follow-up for those of you who were listening. Our guest, Scott Blackburn, actually, he made amazing strides on behalf of our North State veterans last week. We've got all sorts of good things going on. We're looking into some issues that are happening and lots of things like travel pay and distance to appointments. There are a lot of people who wind up driving, you know, to Sacramento to get the results of an MRI or something like that. That's just silly. So he has a rural task force working on some stuff for our guys and gals up here. So that's kind of exciting. Stay tuned on that one. So today we're shifting topics. We're going from big government to, I don't know what we call it.
World chaos.
World chaos. There you go. That's a good way to describe it. Because we're talking about the threat of Islam, and the website that Peter Friedman has is actually islamthreat.com. Peter Friedman, he's been studying and lecturing on the threat of Islam to America for over 40 years. He maintains a thorough collection of Qurans and English translations, beginning with George Sale's translation in 1734. Each one's been studied and researched and compared to other documents, variations, and translations. He's basically, he knows everything. We know nothing, so we'll do very little talking.
I'm hoping he can decode what the heck's going on in the world today.
I mean,
it seems like every other day we're hearing of another
more chaos.
Atrocity. Yeah.
He wrote an article, and you know, I need to ask him the date, but it was called Barack Hussein Obama and His Middle East Connections. And this was quite a while back. And interestingly enough, pretty much everything in the article is or has happened. So I guess we'll label him with the air quotes title of prophet as well. Mr. Friedman, how's that?
I am humbled by your introduction, and it's just great to be back with you. It seems like every 2 years, I wish it were sooner.
Well, I do too, and you know, it's kind of weird. I was looking at that. You were on in October 2014, October 2012, August 2014, and here we are in July 2016. It's totally weird. I didn't do it on purpose. You need to email me more.
Well, there you go. I can certainly do that. I am going to send you a copy of my book. I sent you an email, I guess it was last night. If you'll give me the address, it's on CD. You can also get it on my website, islamthreat.com, and it says 36 articles by Peter Friedman over on the right-hand side of the page, and it is for sale very economically off the website, too. It comes on a CD, so you put it in the computer, or you can take it to some place like Kinko's or FedEx Office, Staples, and just have them print it out.
Nice.
Yeah, 220 pages and 36 articles.
Holy cow, because you've been doing I don't remember how we first met you, but I do believe it was through your writing again.
And that is correct.
And through the Tea Party, I'm sure. So I don't know where you want to go today. We don't have an agenda on this because obviously we haven't translated anything except your schedule into our time zone. that's our big claim to fame.
You know, based on everything that's going on, And, you know, I've been sitting here and literally studying the convention, and I will be eagerly studying the convention this week. But what has fascinated me was the fact that Obama, in the middle of apparently Mike Pence's acceptance speech, was entertaining a bunch of Muslims for a Muslim holiday in the White House at the same time.
Oh, big shock.
And what kills me is that he comes up with this same BS propaganda every time he's involved with the Muslim community. And it started out on June 4, 2009, when he was in Cairo at Al-Azhar University. And it extended all the way up to a few months ago when he visited the mosque in Baltimore that has been associated factually. I mean, you can look that up, with a number of Muslim terrorists that have come out of there, Anwar al-Awlaki, who used to preach there and stuff. And I have in front of me, and I've got all my books open in front of me, of course, Sharia law, the Quran, Bukhari's hadith. So I'm ready for you.
Yeah, you're starting to scare me.
Well, what fascinates me is that, again, Obama launched into this rhetoric a couple of days ago about how Islam has always been a part of America's heritage since our founding, and it's just absolutely factually wrong. And when you go back, which I just did yesterday, and printed out again his transcript for his speech at the mosque in Baltimore, I'm just struck by either his abject ignorance of Islam, or there is some other explanation. But he starts out here, for example, in the middle of this transcript, it says, for more than, and I'm quoting, for more than 1,000 years, people have been drawn to Islam's message of peace. And again, he just said this a couple of days ago, and I quote, and the very word itself, Islam, comes from the Arabic word salam, meaning peace. And that is factually bull.
Yeah, because we've had other people on, and it means subjugate or something. Isn't it something bad?
Islam means, in Arabic, Islam means submission.
Oh, there you go. I knew it was something bad.
And it means submission to the will of Allah. A Muslim is one who submits. So you've got to ask yourself, is this man just ignorant, or is this abject propaganda? And then he goes on and he says, and here is another fact, and I'm quoting, here is another fact. Islam has always been part of America. Starting in colonial times, many of the slaves brought here from Africa were Muslim. And even in their bondage, some kept their faith alive. Unquote. And it fascinates the heck out of me that Obama is descendant from a tribe in Kenya who used to enslave other black Africans, and they would sell them to the Muslim slave traders two or three hundred years ago, who in turn sold them to the British, the French, the Dutch, the Portuguese. That's how they wound up coming into our hemisphere. So they were forced to convert, because that's exactly what the Quran requires, convert or die. And these people converted to Islam to try and save themselves from the Muslim slave traders, and this is all throughout the Quran and the Hadith. As a matter of fact, the contempt that Muhammad had for the black community and black Africans is in the Hadith itself, where he refers to them as the raisin heads. You
wow.
You can't make this stuff up. And what fascinates me is for the last 4 years, I think, 3 to 4 years at least, every time I do a presentation, I do not have Muslims that show up anymore. I used to early on, and then we would get into a debate, and I would read directly from the Quran and the Hadith. And they could not refute it. They couldn't argue it because that's what it says. So when you have, for example, our president who propagandizes the American public by saying that Islam means peace, it's a religion of peace, it's been hijacked by radicals, that is ulterior. It's just garbage. It is just garbage. For God's sake, read the book. And nobody bothers to read the book. I attended an interfaith dialogue, if you will. And that's nonsense, of course, because a dialogue in the Socratic method means there's two equal parties who are conversing. Well, if you are from the Islamic side, there is no dialogue. It's our way or the highway.
Right.
And I wrote a commentary on my visit to a Presbyterian church in Lafayette, probably 3 or 4 years ago. And it was very interesting because there was this Las Vegas lounge act that appeared there. These three guys, they bill themselves out as the Three Amigos. And you have a pastor, a Christian pastor, a very liberal Jewish rabbi, and you have this imam from Pakistan. And I was sitting there in the audience, and the first thing that caught my eye or my ear was when the imam mentioned the fact that there were 6,150 verses in the Quran. Well, he's patently wrong. There's 114 chapters or surahs, and there's 6,247 verses. So where the extra three came from, I don't know. Maybe those are the satanic verses that Salman Rushdie was mentioning. So in the meantime, they're sitting there, and they're going through this whole thing, and they're buddy-buddy, you know, doing this Las Vegas lounge act in front of 200 people that were there in the church. And then they ask for questions. And the first question that I asked from the audience was directed to the pastor and the rabbi. And I said, do you, either of you gentlemen, have you ever read the Quran? And they both responded, no. I said, then how do you know what the imam is telling you about Islam is true? Well, we're taking his word for it. Now, that just didn't sound very scientifically empirical to me. Anyway, I was then very shortly afterwards asked to leave, and I was escorted out.
Oh, just for those,
oh, really?
Just for that question, huh?
Just for that question, I was escorted out as a troublemaker.
So much for that dialogue now, there.
Now, here's something else that's really interesting. When you go back to the transcript from the mosque in Baltimore, Obama makes the following statement, and I quote, Jefferson and John Adams had their own copies of the Quran. Okay, if you go onto Google and you will Google a picture of Keith Ellison, the Congress critter from up in Minnesota where Dearborn is, and you Google him taking his oath of office in 2006 as a congressperson, being administered by Nancy Pelosi, you will discover that his left hand is on a two-volume set of the Quran. If you go to Article 6 of the Constitution, that is a complete and total violation of the congressional oath because you are taking an oath to support and defend our Constitution, which is completely contradicted by the Quran, Hadith, and Sharia law as man-made law versus divine law. So I got a hold of Nancy Pelosi's office, and I said, okay, I said, what is the story here with Ellison taking his oath of office on this two-volume set of the Quran? And her response was back to me that, oh, well, that set of the Quran came out of Thomas Jefferson's library in Monticello, which really indicates that he had a profound respect for Islam. And I said, you are an ignorant SOB. You
and,
are a
and
moron.
We've all said that so many times.
And you are and you are probably the subject of the public school system because you have no idea what the facts are. Here are the facts, and you will find them on my website under Jefferson and the Muslims. And in fact, David Barton and Glenn Beck did their show based upon what I have on my website. Down in Santa Barbara, at the Karpolis Manuscript Library, David Karpeles, in his manuscript collection, and I've been lecturing for him since 1983, he has the original letter that was sent by Jefferson and John Adams in 1785. October 21st was signed by Adams, and Jefferson signed it in Paris on October 25th, 1785. And it was a letter that was supposed to be delivered to our envoy, to the Pasha in Tripoli. And if you remember your Marine Corps hymn, right, from the halls of Montezuma to the shores of
Tripoli.
There you go. In the letter, and you can pull it up on my website, Jefferson and the Muslims, it's a three-page letter, and Jefferson and Adams were getting very frustrated with the North African Muslims, who the media would like to call the Barbary Pirates, take the word Muslim out of there, were grabbing our merchant ships, and they were holding our crews and merchant ships for ransom. So the letter now goes to Captain Lamb, L-A-M-B, who delivers it to the Pasha of the Caliphate in Tripoli, Libya. And question number seven, there were eight questions. Question number seven specifically asks, by what principles of their religion, meaning Islam, do they feel that they can enslave and grab our ships and crews until they enter into a treaty, okay, with us? And I'm paraphrasing it. You can read it verbatim for yourself. That's question seven, comes right out of the letter. So up until 1785, Jefferson and Adams knew zip about Islam. There was no Islam going on here in America. Nobody had a clue. Now, the two-volume set that was in Jefferson's library was a set published in 1765 in London, and it was the English translation by George Sale, a Brit who did the very first English translation in 1734. And if you want to read that, it's also on my website under Quran. I have a whole bunch of them there that are legitimate ones. So what happened was Jefferson wrote to Adams, because Adams was our ambassador to London, and he says, hey, I got to find out about these people and what they believe. He says, can you get me a copy of whatever their religious text is? So Adams gets this copy, two-volume, leather-bound set, and he sends it to Thomas Jefferson, and that's how it wound up in Jefferson's library in Monticello. So all of this garbage that is put out here by the other side is propaganda. They make Joseph Goebbels look sane and well-adjusted.
And they use a lot of his techniques. We've got to take a really quick break here, Peter. We will be right back. I hope folks take a second if you happen to be near your computer, whether you're listening live or on the archive. We are at wethepeopleradio.us. You'll find all the information about Peter Friedman and his link to his website, islamthreat.com. We'll be back with him. He's here for 2 hours, so we're going to learn a lot today.
What shall we do about them when they move into your neighborhood? They take over, but you all body and soul, then it's just your body, then they go. What shall we do about them?
In times by now, people do the poker, dominance, submission,
radio.
This New Year's Eve was the final barrier,
dominance,
submission,
radio.
We took you up and we put you in the backseat,
dominance,
submission,
radio.
From year to year, we looked up for the venture,
dominance,
submission,
radio superior,
dominance, submission,
dominance.
Not to be confused with peace. So it would translate into dominance in Islam, actually,
right,
if we were going to be official about it.
Hey, Peter, well, I have a question for you. You know, you talked about the copy of the Quran that Thomas Jefferson had and Ms. Pelosi's misunderstanding of why he had it. Is there evidence to show they had a true understanding of what Islam really was about?
You mean Jefferson?
Or Jefferson, yes.
Sure, absolutely. Here's a fact. When Jefferson was president in 1805, Jefferson finally got fed up again with our ships and crews being grabbed and enslaved and held for ransom over there in North Africa. And the very first conflict that America ever got involved in was our conquest of the Barbary pirates and the North African Muslims. That was in 1805. Thomas Jefferson sent six frigates over there. And if you want to read some history of John Paul Jones, he was involved earlier than that. And what's interesting is that is the very first use by America of what was then the new creation of the Fleet Marines, who were called Leathernecks. You know why they were called Leathernecks? Because if you don't know, here's an answer to a Jeopardy question. Could win you a lot of money. The Marines were called Leathernecks for the simple reason that they knew that the Muslims liked to cut heads off as required by the Quran, especially in Book 8, verse 12. And what the Marines were issued were these large, heavy leather collars. And they wore them around their necks when they were fighting the Muslims.
No kidding.
Wow, there's a piece of relevant current history.
There you go. Little obscure fact. You know, you got to do the research, and I've been researching this stuff for years and years and years, and that's why every time I hear somebody like Barack Obama come out with this propagandizing, it just waves red flags and makes me, as Meg Ryan said in the movie French Kiss, absolutely crazy. People in America, they're too damn lazy to do research, and they cannot suspend their disbelief. And if you read my treatise that I wrote on the psychology of Muslim atrocity, disbelief in this country is just amazing to me. People do not want to believe that another ideology that is masquerading as a religion to get religious tolerance could possibly be based on these religious obligations to subjugate and slaughter anybody who resists them. And it's right there in the book. Just read the book. And I have the books open right now. I've got Reliance of the Traveler, which is Sharia law. Anybody can buy this on the internet. I recommend it wholeheartedly. Read it for yourself. And here is all of the information on jihad. Obama came out months ago and was talking about the definition of jihad, and he was absolutely wrong. And the only analogy I can make is like the Nazis at Auschwitz, and they put all the Jews in France and in Poland and Romania and elsewhere, Austria, and put them in these cattle cars, especially during the winter. No food, no bathroom facilities, nothing, and they shipped them off to Auschwitz, and they stopped and opened up the doors to the cattle cars, and the Nazis just looked at them and said, my God, after that long, horrible trip, would a nice hot shower be good?
Right, right. Now,
And they went willingly.
Now, I read just, on some of your stuff there, the relationship the Muslims had with Nazi Germany. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Oh, yeah. Well, unbelievably, the Arabs have always had a relationship with anybody that was against the Jewish community, because this is what is in the Quran, and this is why Muslims hate Jews. It's right there. You can read it for yourself. If you go to my website and go to Quran, the very first thing that will come up is my Quranic index to all the hatred, terror, and intolerance that's in the Quran. But the problem there is that historically, Muhammad, from about 600 to 610, he lived from 570 to 632 A.D., so in other words, 600 years after the birth of Jesus, and he went to the tribe, the Qurayza, who lived in the Jewish tribe that lived in Mecca. And he had grown up in Mecca, and he heard all of the New Testament stories from the Christians that lived there and from the Jewish tribe that lived in Mecca. And then he came back when he kind of put all of this stuff together in his own mind, and he tried to convince the Jewish tribe that was living in Mecca that he was going to be the third and final prophet after Moses, Jesus, and now Muhammad. And he kept preaching to the Jews and preaching to the Jews, you got to believe me, and you know, I'm the last guy, and this is your one last chance. And finally, the Jewish community had enough and told him to get out of town. And in 610, he and his 12 buddies decided to flee to Medina. And that was about 200 miles north. The interesting part of that is in the Quran, there are actually passive verses. In the Quran and passive chapters. Those are the chapters that were written and transmitted during the 600 to 610 in Mecca. Those passages defined what he referred to as the faith. Then he gets to Medina and no more Mr. Nice Guy. Okay, you don't want to do it the nice way, now we're going to do it the hard way. So all of the other chapters and verses in the Quran, with all of the violence and the 109 chapters talking about killing non-Muslims, that all now has been written down in Medina. Well, he had a problem, and the problem was, how do we abrogate the violence verse or the peaceful verse with now a violent verse?
Yeah, it kind of counteracts everything he said prior.
Easy, because Allah, of course, can do all things. So if you go to book 2 and you go to verse 106, that is what is called the abrogation verse. And what book 2 verse 106 says, that was written in Medina, and it's also the second book in the Quran and the longest book, what it says is that we abrogate certain verses and replace them with better verses. Allah knows all.
That's convenient.
And so they point to that. So you've got roughly 20% of the Quran that was peaceful, written in Medina, or that was written in Mecca, and then the other 80% comes out of Medina.
And the Mecca version is the one they always fall back on, that claim that Islam is a religion of peace. Just read it. It's right there.
Okay, so if you go, okay, they always cite this verse, book 2, verse 256. And that verse starts out, there is no compulsion in religion. But the problem is, as I have written before, you must read the verses that come before that and the verses that come after that. So let me explain the scam to you. Because I'll be honest with you, this is brilliant. This is brilliant. Whoever put this thing together really tried to think about anything in the future that might come up. So all these questions, they wind up getting answered. So Muslims will come out and they'll say, no, there is no compulsion in religion. Well, here's the deal. The Quran and the Hadith require a good Muslim to travel and migrate from Dar al-Islam, or in Arabic, the land where Islam rules, to Dar al-Harb, or the land of conflict, where Islam does not rule. Now, America is Dar al-Harb. So what they do is they tell Muslims, okay, here's the deal. All right, Allah says that you must defend the right of Islam to proselytize. So when you come into Dar al-Harb and you encounter a non-believer, an infidel, and you try and convert that infidel to Islam, if they tell you they have no intention of converting, then you have the right to fight them in order to defend the right of Islam to proselytize, because Muslims can't afford for that infidel to begin spreading his repudiation of conversion to other infidels. So they've got to take them out one at a time. That makes Dar al-Harb free for the proselytizing of Islam.
And is that, that's what they're doing in Europe now as well.
Exactly, precisely. And the only reason that we don't see yet in America what is going on now in Europe is because two sides of our country are protected by large oceans.
Yeah,
but now you
can't
have
drive
Prime
here.
Minister of,
yeah.
You have the Prime Minister of Canada, Justin Trudeau, who is an apple who didn't fall far from the tree from his dad. And he is now accepted through the UN, the High Commissioner for Refugees, Antonio Guterres. He is accepting 900 Syrian refugees a day, each day, into Canada.
Lovely.
We're sitting here watching the southern border. In the meantime, we have this infiltration coming from the northern border. This is a real problem.
No, it is
a
problem. And we're not screening these people coming from Canada?
Oh, no, we're not screening anybody.
Well, we're not screening anybody coming from anywhere. You could be falling from outer space and we wouldn't even bat an eye.
Exactly.
Hey, we've got to take another quick break here. Somehow we have to fit this one in one more by the top of the hour. We were bad at the beginning. We'll do better next hour.
Thank God the land bridge melted a million years ago.
And you know they're not coming to Reading because it's 160 million degrees today. But we're only 2 miles from the sun, so it's not to be not really all that unusual. We're going to take a really quick break. We're going to come right back with Peter Friedman. We're talking about all sorts of things about Islam. His website is islamthreat.com. Loads of good information there, folks. And you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. We'll be right back.
I'll keep my freedom. I'll keep my guns. Try to keep my money and my religion, too. Try to keep on working. Try to keep on smiling. I will keep my Christian name, and y'all can keep the change.
And you're listening to We the People on AM 1460 KCNR.
Hi, this is Kyle DeFore from Mighty Fine Foods in Bella Vista. Summer is here, and Mighty Fine Foods is your one-stop shop on the way to the lake. We barbecue every Friday and have everything you need to maximize your summer fun. Stop by the deli for daily specials under $5, sandwiches made to order, and hot food served all day. With over 1,000 cold drinks, more than 250 beers, a full liquor and wine section, and the best meat prices you'll find anywhere, Mighty Fine pairs big store selection with small store service. Mighty Fine is just a short drive east of Reading at the corner of 299 and Deschutes. In beautiful Bella Vista. Locally owned and operated since 1977, Mighty Fine.
Founded in 1995, GI Pathology is the only physician-owned laboratory in the United States dedicated solely to the practice of gastrointestinal and liver pathology. The company provides the highest quality GI pathology diagnosis made exclusively by one of our fellowship-trained gastrointestinal and liver pathologists. GI Pathology delivers results to its Northern California client base within an industry-leading 24 hours. Call 888-2-GI-PATH or go to www.gipath.com for more information.
Holiday Harbor, we've got it all for you. But we're more than just great houseboats. We have the vacation you have been looking for without the drive or airport hassle. Fishing boats, patio boats, 47-foot party cruisers, wakeboards, jet skis, and stand-up paddleboards. If it floats or you can pull it behind a boat, we probably have it for your enjoyment. Visit Holiday Harbor, exit 695 of Interstate 5, or go to LakeShasta.com. Holiday Harbor, your own vacation in town.
Slow down. Hi, this is Dr. Trudy Pratt. My chiropractic and nutrition practice in downtown Reading has been helping people feel better for over 20 years. We pride ourselves in really listening to our patients and then tailoring a program of nutrition, chiropractic care, massage, and exercise that's just right for you. The results can be dramatic. Call 244-7873. That's 244-7873. Thank you.
KCNR, 1460 AM, the most local programming in Northern California.
Don't you know, talking about a revolution sounds while they're standing in the welfare lines, crying at the doorsteps of those armies of salvation.
Nice.
Wasting time.
All right, Peter, we've got a question for you in the chat room here. These guys quit.
Awesome.
If they would quit typing, then my screen would quit shifting. Okay. So one of our folks says, Ellison spokesman Rick somebody or other said that Keith is paying respect not only to the Founding Fathers' belief in religious freedom, but the Constitution itself. Ellison, who was originally told about the Quran from an anonymous letter, spoke to the Associated Press in a phone interview. He said that using Jefferson's Quran makes the point. It demonstrates that from the very beginning of our country, we had people who were visionary, who were religiously tolerant, who believed that knowledge and wisdom could be gleaned from any number of sources, including the Quran. A visionary like Thomas Jefferson was not afraid of a different belief system, Ellison said. This just shows that religious tolerance is the bedrock of our country, and religious differences are nothing to be afraid of. Yeah, so...
You want my one-word retort?
Isn't it two words?
Isn't crap.
I was thinking Bravo Sierra. Okay, yeah. Yeah, crap.
Yeah,
crap.
No,
that's much shorter.
No, Ellison is another propagandist. He is absolutely another propagandist. He represents the Muslim enclave of Hamtramck and Dearborn, Michigan, which are two areas that are totally controlled by the Muslim community. They do not assimilate. They don't want to assimilate. It is all part of the civilization jihad. He's absolutely incorrect, and he's either propagandizing or he's really that ignorant. He's never read the book. So speaking of the book, let me respond this way. We're talking about terrorism, and what you put up on the website was my commentary on the psychology of Muslim atrocity. Yes. Let me read you a couple of verses directly from the Quran, because people say that, especially Obama, that this is a great religion hijacked by radicals. In fact, that ignorant George Bush said that on 9/12. And he said that Islam is one of the great religions. He stood right there at ground zero, and he said that the United States will never be at war with Islam, in spite of the fact that Islam has been at war with us, you know, for 1,400 years.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's just unbelievable. We had an opportunity after 9/11 immediately to stop this, and we bought into it. We bought into it because of all of the campaign money that goes to everybody, including the Clintons and the Clinton Foundation. But you ought to take a look at the campaign funds from Islamic unindicted co-conspirators and the Holy Land Foundation prosecution 8 years ago that have gone into the campaign funds, for example, of Tim Kaine and Chris Christie. Look it up. It's all there. All people have to do is get off their duff and do a little research, and you will discover how much money has come from the Islamic community and the Muslim Brotherhood organizations in the United States and outside the United States, which is absolutely illegal. All of that money that came in from half a dozen foreign Middle East governments in the Middle East to the Clinton Foundation, it is absolutely illegal. Absolutely illegal. So let's take a look at a couple of things here, because people hold up, for example, the Jordanian pilot that was caged and doused with kerosene and then set on fire. Well, that's not Islam. Islam doesn't teach that. Oh, yes, it does. I will read the exact verse to you. Things like drowning these people in the cages, cutting heads off. Absolutely. Book 8, verse 12, amongst other ones, 47.74. It's all there. Read the book. And every time I do this with a presentation, somebody says, well, isn't there a problem trying to translate Arabic into English? Here's the response. And I always say to them, you know all these suicide bombers going on around the world? Yeah. Are they reading the Quran in English or Arabic? And that shuts that conversation down right now.
You mean they're not reading it in English?
In England and America, they're reading it in English. You know, if you go on my website and you look, if you look at the original English translation from 1734 by George Sale, you compare that to the Pikfal translation, the Yusuf Ali translation, the Shakir translation, they're all the same. So you would think in the last 250-some-odd years, 260 years, if there was a problem translating it from Arabic into English, somebody would have said something. But the Muslim clerics don't. And I'll get to that in a minute, because I'm going to read from you from an Islamic textbook that is used in the Islamic schools in the United States, in the mosques, for kids that are 14 to 16 years old, and your hair is going to stand up. So, reading directly from the Quran, for example, Book 3, verse 151, and I quote, "We will cast terror into the hearts of those who disbelieve. Their abode is the fire, and evil is the abode of the unjust." The word terror is right there. Translates perfectly from the Arabic. Let's see. How about book 4? Well, let's go to book 12. Verse 12. "I will cast terror into the hearts of those who disbelieve, therefore strike off their heads." It's all right there. Book 8, verse 39, "Fight with them," that's us, "until there is no more persecution, and religion should be only for Allah." You see what the end game is?
Yeah.
No more Christianity, no more Judaism. The world must succumb and submit to Islam in the end. Let's see, Book 9, verse 73, "Strive hard against the unbelievers and the hypocrites and be unyielding to them. And their abode is hell, and evil is the destination." Then you go into the Hadith, and you go into the Hadith of Bukhari, for example. 90% of all of the sayings of Muhammad are codified in Bukhari's Hadith. Volume 4, Book 52, verse number 177. Allah's apostle said, that's Muhammad, quote, "The hour will not be established until you fight with the Jews, and the stone behind which a Jew will be hiding will say, 'O Muslim, there is a Jew hiding behind me, so come and kill him.'" Volume 4, Book 52, number 220, Muhammad said, quote, "I have been sent with the shortest expressions, bearing the widest meanings, and I have made victorious with terror," unquote. It's replete. All through all Islamic literature, I don't care whether it's Sharia, it doesn't make any difference. So, and what's interesting is in Bukhari, there is Book 56, which is entitled The Book of Jihad. And what happens is when you talk to a Muslim, this is more propaganda, they say, well, there are two types of jihad. There is the greater jihad and the lesser jihad. Really? What's the greater jihad? Well, that is the struggle for a Muslim soul. Uh-huh. What's the lesser jihad? Oh, well, that's holy war. And my response always, I'm sitting here with a copy of Bukhari. I've got volume 4. I'm looking at it. Here's book 56. It's called The Book of Jihad, Fighting for Allah's Cause, Holy War. Holy fighting. How come in all of this literature there is no book of the greater jihad?
Yeah.
Interesting. There's no answer. There can be no answer. Okay, so I have in front of me right now volume 4. It is a textbook that is used throughout the United States in the mosques. The Friday school for Muslims, not to be confused with Sunday school. And it's entitled A Guide for the Young Muslim, Book 4. And in here, this is for ages, and there's four volumes, and this is for ages, 14 or 16 to 18? No, this is 16 to 18. This is now when we get to be young jihadis. And it says in here, and I read, on page 2, jihad means struggling and fighting against all evil powers from within and from without the community. The struggle against evil powers could be with arms when it's necessary, especially when these evil powers turn violent. This is what we're teaching young Muslims in America, in the mosque.
the Abu Bakr, who is the guy who succeeded Muhammad when Muhammad died in 632, is quoted as saying, quote, "No one of you should forsake jihad in the path of Allah. Any people who forsake jihad, Allah will strike with humiliation." This is in the textbook. This is what they're being taught.
So it's not not exactly optional. Peter, we've got to take one more quick break here before the top of the hour, and we'll come right back to let people know what we're going to chat about the second hour. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. It's supposed to be a happy song, but in light of the topic, it's kind of scary. So, Peter, we've got about a minute and a half before the news cuts us off. So give folks some idea of what we're going to talk about in the second hour.
Well, what's always fun is to delve into Obama's Middle East connection, who paid for his education, and, you know, the people that he's been involved with. Especially the Saudis, and you know, if you get my book, and chapter 5 is Obama's Middle East connection, I'm going to send you a copy. Email me an address where to send it, and I'll do it tomorrow.
And then, can you hit some of the stuff on Tim Kaine? I just posted that on the website.
Oh, I've seen that. Yes, a very good friend of mine. Is Dr. Carl Goldberg in Phoenix, and he has his website, which is Ideology Islam.
It's
very interesting. As a matter of fact, he just short story, he wound up like Pam Geller, who I know, and Steve Emerson and Robert Spencer. They all wound up on CARE's, you know, Islamophobe annual list, and they keep missing me. And I don't understand why. So, you know, Dr.
We'll see
Goldberg
if we can,
said, well, why don't
catapult you forward?
We're going to try to change that, if you don't mind.
Maybe this will finally do it. I did wind up. This is interesting. The Southern Poverty Law Center, which is a hate group into itself,
yes.
They listed me in the Bay Area as one of the six Bay Area hate groups.
Nice. All by
and
yourself?
I had an independent, yeah, this cracks me up. I had an independent reporter named Ayafi.
All right, we gotta jump off. The news is gonna cut us off. We're talking with Peter Friedman. We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Back to the second hour of We the People. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
And I'm Bob Martin.
And without one of us, we're not We the People anymore. We're just schleps trying to solve a two-hour crisis on the radio. So we have all three of us in here today, so things are...
Takes three to...
Things are cooking with
to
Crisco.
To make a community.
I guess you can't really say cooking with Crisco anymore, because isn't Crisco banned or something?
Well, it's very bad for you now, yeah. It has to be
olive oil. That makes me old, too.
It has to be virgin olive oil now.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Well, that leads us directly into our topic. We're going to talk about virgins. We're discussing with Peter Friedman all about Islam and what actually isn't real and what we're being told and
cover getting walked into the net, actually.
Peter, I know we want to talk about Obama's background and his education. Before we go there, though, just to kind of stay with what you were talking about earlier, one of the arguments that I've gotten about the Quran is it's no different than the New and Old Testament, you know, the Old Testament being fire and brimstone. We've softened it all up now, so it's okay.
Peter's head just exploded.
Yeah, I'm sorry, but I had to bring that up.
As Glenn Beck says, I got blood coming out of my eyes now.
Sorry about that.
This is all part of the propaganda, okay? What Muhammad attempted to do was he attempted to try to show the Jewish community in Mecca back in 600 that Islam was the third in the trilogy of the Abrahamic faith. In other words, it started out with the Old Testament and Judaism, then the New Testament and Jesus. And now, because the Jews and the Christians had corrupted their scriptures, God now got pissed off and said, okay, I'm going to give you guys, mankind, one last opportunity to get it right. And this time, we're going to try the Muslims. We're going to try the pagan Arabs, okay, at the time, because there were no Muslims. So this is propaganda, okay? Mm-hmm. This is trying to extrapolate out the fact that Isaac, all right, had two sons, right? Jacob and Ishmael. Abraham, pardon me, let me go back. I get so wrapped up in the Quran, sometimes I forget my new Old Testament. So Abraham had two sons. If you read the Old Testament and you read this in Genesis, and Abraham essentially was 100 years old. Sarah at the time was 90-some-odd years old. And God spoke to Abraham saying that you're going to be the father of a great nation, et cetera, et cetera. Sarah will give birth. Sarah laughed. Her name originally was Sarai, S-A-R-I, and because she laughed and God said, you will be a princess among mankind, the name was changed to Sarah, which means princess. And Abraham used to be called Abram, and then he became Abraham. Okay, so Abraham slept with Hagar, Sarah's servant, and they wound up having Ishmael. Now, what's interesting is that the Muslims essentially on one side say that Jews and Muslims are first cousins or stepbrothers because they came from the same father, meaning Abraham, Ishmael, and Isaac. All right. The second piece of propaganda is when you get into the story of Mecca and you get into the Kaaba, which houses the meteorite that is sitting in there, the holy black stone that supposedly Allah threw down to the earth as a sign. You have that stone sitting in the Kaaba, and when you make the Hajj or the pilgrimage once in your life, everybody walks seven times around the Kaaba, and that Kaaba, in theory, what they say, was built by Abraham and Ishmael when Abraham and Ishmael and Hagar were relocated essentially from Palestine down to Mecca, and then Abraham went back to live with Sarah and then had Isaac. Well, Abraham, in fact, never set foot on the Arabian Peninsula. Never happened, okay? So that's as baloney as the ascension of Muhammad from the Well of the Souls and the Dome of the Rock on the Temple Mount in Jerusalem, you know, up to sit at the right hand of Allah, which was something he related in a dream. So, I mean, you know, you really got to look with some criticality at some of this stuff. And what happens, of course, is that in Islam, if you question anything or you ask questions, we have to kill you because we don't want that to spread.
Right.
And that's why this is what happens with that.
Just the fact that you're questioning that is enough to have your head lopped off.
Well, the very first book, which is the shortest book in the Quran, is Chapter 1, and it says this is the Holy Quran. Because it's the Quran, it's the Word of God, and because it's the Word of God, everything is true.
Well, that
pardon?
That pretty much settles it right there.
Huh?
There you go.
Yeah.
So if when I encounter a Muslim, all right, and we get into some kind of a conversation, I can't call it a dialogue because that's not where they're coming from. They're trying to convert me. And I say, well, let me ask you a question. First question, I said, do you believe that every word literally in the Quran comes directly from Allah? Now, they must answer yes. The minute they answer yes, you know what you're dealing with.
Yep.
You absolutely know what you're dealing with. Because now when you go to some of these other chapters and verses that I read earlier in this program, you know, where it says, hey, you know, it's a religious obligation on the part of Muslims to offer you, you know, a choice, either convert or die. If you're a Jew or a Christian, of course, you get door number two, which says that you get to pay extortion to be allowed to live under Islamic rule, you know, as long as you keep contributing. You know, no longer does Guido show up at your place of business on Friday. Now it's Ahmed. You know, pick up the envelope with the cash in it, and we're going to leave you alone. We're going to grant you protection.
So anyway, what goes on with our political people who are, I don't know, covering for this or making this possible, bringing all these people into the White House and into this administration and all that, and trying to convince everybody that it's not a threat?
Very simple.
What are they getting out of
it? Very simple. Follow the money.
Okay.
Follow the money. Look at the campaign contributions that have been given to Chris Christie. The second largest mosque in the United States is in Passaic, New Jersey. Chris Christie thinks that people like me are just a bunch of crazies. We don't know what the hell we're talking about. The man has never in his life read the Quran or the Hadith. He has no clue, but he wants the money. He has put members of the Executive Committee of CARE, the Council on American Islamic Relations, an unindicted co-conspirator in the Holy Land Foundation, on the Superior Court in New Jersey. Make no mistake, Rick Perry took $20 million from the Aga Khan when Rick Perry was governor of Texas to create an Islamic studies program in the Texas public schools. Carly Fiorina made a speech right after 9/11, and she reiterated that speech about 9 months ago as a candidate for president, stating that if it were not for Islam, we would not have a computer industry. These people are panderers. They are, I hope they're just ignorant. I really hope they're just ignorant. And then you can imagine where Hillary Clinton is coming from, and Tim Kaine now with his Islamist connections, when they say they want to bring 65,000 supposed Syrian refugees who cannot be vetted into the country in her first year as president. Now, you've also got Jim Comey, you've got General Flynn from the DNI, you've got all of these people who have come out and said, look, we've got to tell you this up front, that we estimate that at least 2% of everybody we can't vet coming in here is going to be a radical Muslim. Well, do the math. 65,000? That's 1,300 terrorists minimum.
Yeah, 2% is a really big number.
Talk to us a little bit more about Tim Kaine. What's his connections?
Well, the other problem is it's not just the Democrats.
True.
It's also the Republicans, people like, again, like Carly Fiorina, like Rick Perry.
Well, in most cases, none of them can say no to the money. That's the problem.
That's the problem. That is the problem. And what I hope is that the FBI is continuing to take a look into the Clinton Foundation, because when you take a look at the amount of money that has been deposited into that foundation from Saudi Arabia, from Kuwait, from Oman, from the Emirates, from Algeria, from Tunisia. You don't spend that kind of money unless you expect to get something back. And this was all being done while she was Secretary of State. And right afterwards, they would deposit money, and by God, as Secretary of State, all of a sudden she would go ahead through the State Department and okay the shipment of arms deals.
This is what happened with Morsi and the Muslim Brotherhood over there. It is an unholy alliance between these people. And if you read Saul Alinsky, Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals, his 11 rules, and the whole mantra, which was taught, by the way, by Barack Obama in Chicago as a community organizer, in October 28, 1968, Hillary Clinton did her senior thesis at Wellesley College on the Alinsky Method. Look it up. For God's sake, read this. She interviewed him personally in Chicago on two separate occasions, October 28, 1968. He sent a letter to her, and you can pull that up on the internet or you can email me, I'll send it to you, inviting her to become an instructor in Chicago at his newly founded Industrial Areas Foundation to teach the Alinsky Method. Let me take it a step further. Let's bring it up to date. You remember when Bill Clinton just happened to fly into Sky Harbor Airport in Phoenix weeks ago? And doggone if he didn't find Loretta Lynch's airplane sitting there on the tarmac.
It was way
That was a lucky break
what
there.
What a bunch of crap. Unbelievable. What a bunch of garbage. And we ate that up. We gave them the benefit of the doubt because of America's disbelief syndrome. We do not want to believe that people that we voted for would lie to us and jeopardize our security. We don't want to believe that.
I think that's starting to turn a little bit, though. I certainly hope so.
Oh, God, I hope so. Otherwise, we're done.
Oh, I know it.
Yep.
I mean, this is it. This is it. We are done. And if Hillary Clinton gets in and spends the next 4 years doing everything that Obama was doing and even more through this unholy alliance to tear the fabric down so that they can rebuild it and have a one-party governing system in this country will never look like the country we grew up in. You know, it won't. I mean, I'm 71, and I can tell you right now that what I have seen in the last 50 years is really scary. It's the death by a thousand cuts.
Well, just what's happened in the last 8 years has completely turned our political arena upside down, and I think that's why people are so fed up, and it's undoubtedly the reason Donald Trump is running away with this. People are fed up with the lies and the deceit. And they're not buying it anymore.
Well, I think everybody knows how unstable all of this has become, too. I mean, people didn't. There were a lot of people who said that we were all crazy, you know, back in, you know, 2009, starting the Tea Parties and stuff.
Oh, believe me, I know.
Oh, yeah, we were all
a bunch of kooks.
We were all a bunch of kooks, and we were just, you know, racist haters and all sorts of stuff. It's like, well, you know, now I'm thinking maybe. All right, we need to take a really, really quick break here, or we'll be doing them all at the end, like last hour. We'll see if we can keep us on track a little bit. We are here with Peter Friedman. We were talking about Islam and how, you know, you got to read. You really do. You got to read. If you don't want to believe him, do the reading. It's all on there. IslamThreat.com is his website. You can find all the links to articles and things like that on ours, WeThePeopleRadio.us. And we'll be right back.
Well, you filled up my head with so many lies. You twisted my heart till something snapped inside. I'd like to give it one more try, but my give a damn's busted.
Lies, lies, you're telling me that you'll be true. Lies, lies, that's all I ever get from you. Cheers, cheers, I shed a million cheers for you. Cheers, cheers, and now you're loving someone new. Someday I'm gonna be happy, but I don't know when or just now. Lies, lies, breaking my heart.
It all comes back to the lies, doesn't it? So we're here with Peter Friedman. We're talking about
Islam. His website is islamthreat.com, and you've got a ton of really good information there. All right, Peter, where to now?
Well, let me just bring Donald Trump up for a minute.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Okay. God, I hope there is somebody listening to this broadcast that has access to the Trump campaign and maybe to the Donald directly. I was watching yesterday, and he was again commenting about how the system is rigged. He mentioned Bernie Sanders, how the Democrat system is rigged with the superdelegates. Here's an idea. If Trump would come out, in my opinion, and he would make an appeal to the Sanders voters stating that if they vote for Hillary, nothing will change with the Democrats. It will remain rigged. The superdelegate system will stay in effect. However, Trump has said, I am going to change this rigged system to make it fair. Now, in fact, if the Democrats didn't have the superdelegate system, Bernie Sanders might have won. So if I were Donald Trump, from a political standpoint, I would make an appeal to the Sanders voters saying, hey, you want the system to get unrigged? Vote for me. Just an idea.
Yeah.
Just a thought.
Sure. And you know anything about, you know, ties on his end to any of this stuff? I mean, obviously we know where Hillary is. Now we know Tim Kaine's deep into the, you know, Muslim deal.
What fascinates me is that Americans have never underestimate the ignorance of the average voter to do research. It fascinates the hell out of me. For example, if you take Hillary, who has never created a job that wasn't paid for by the taxpayer to benefit her, and you take Donald Trump from the private sector, who has a lifetime of major accomplishments, who said, I am going to build this, and then built it, and who has employed hundreds of thousands of people in his adult career along the way, and you hold these two people up, the clarity is mind-boggling. Here is a guy with lifelong accomplishments in the private sector of creating jobs. One of the things that has always fascinated me, and I've put into every one of my presentations, is that the administration of Obama has had the lowest business experience of any administration in the history of the United States at 8%.
Well, that's totally reflected in the policies that he's enacted over the last 8 years.
Well, of course.
I mean, it's
and the highest, believe it or not, the highest was Dwight Eisenhower. The second highest was Ronald Reagan. And now you take a look at the recoveries after recessions. When there has been a Republican president, look what Reagan did. I was one of Reagan's two pilots when he ran for president in 1980. I was flying him up and down the state of California while he was giving speeches. And you look at what occurred in October, November of 1979, or 1980, pardon me, and you had the hostage crisis. You had the prime rate that was close to 19%. You had the mortgage rate of 16 to 18%. We were humiliated around the world with Jimmy Carter. The man never met a terrorist he didn't like. It was unbelievable because I was going back and forth to Europe all the time, to France and Paris and London, participating in manuscript auctions all the time. And people were laughing at us, and they would look at me and they would call you American, and they would go, ha, 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 ha. You know, Jimmy Carter. Good grief. Reagan comes in. You don't screw with Ronald Reagan. And the juxtaposition of circumstances between Carter leaving and Reagan coming in from outside the United States was like night and day. It was amazing.
Well, I think
it
you're going to see the same thing. I mean, if Trump comes in, I think, in fact, I think right now there's foreigners that are foreign countries that are terrified of Trump. I mean, he has the opportunity. We were talking about this the other day. He's got the opportunity of becoming even greater than Reagan. I mean, the mess that he's going to inherit and the things
yeah,
that
the potential
he can do,
for turnaround.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, he can turn some stuff around and really, I mean, walk away a hero at this point.
And he's done it.
Oh, he has done it. And he's done it. He knows how to do it.
And he will bring the people around him that know how to do it. He's got people in there like Stephen Moore. He's got people like Carl Icahn, Steve Forbes, Art Laffer. These are all people who know how to do the job. They're all contributors, you know, on the news and everything else. And it's like everything they say is it falls on deaf ears, especially on the other side.
So,
but the Democrats, I was very interested in watching the program with Harris Faulkner yesterday about the left turn. I don't know whether you saw it on Fox. But the left turn of Hillary Clinton and the Democrat Party. I have been telling people this since George McGovern ran against Nixon in 1968. George McGovern turned into a bloody communist. He was consorting in Cuba with Fidel Castro. Look at Google. Put in Castro and George McGovern. Here are pictures of the two of them riding around Cuba in a Jeep, smiling, laughing, having a great time.
I think
that's when the Democrats, that's when they turned.
I think his disdain for Trump is really tarnishing his record. He is, some of the stuff he's coming up with is out in left field. Getting back with George Will.
Oh, George Will. No, I'm talking about George McGovern.
Okay.
George Will,
Bill's
George
time
Will,
traveling.
And Jesus, you can put George Will in the same tent as John Kasich and Ted Cruz, and you're killing the party.
He's killing the opportunity. So tell me this, as far as the Muslim threat, is there any ties? I'm sure that Trump has done business with foreign nationals, but is there anything in the closet you think is going to come up with Trump that is going to hurt him between now and November as far as the Muslim influence?
Well, you know the kind of research, obviously, that I do, and I haven't been able to find anything.
And I'm pretty sure Pence has nothing. He's a very straight arrow.
Yeah. Pence is, yeah. But Cain, you know, I mean, all you got to look at is the biography of this guy, and you see where he's been. You can see the influences that he had in his life. You know, and you can't discount those things. You cannot discount his connection and the promotion of identified Islamists in the local government in Virginia. It's like Chris Christie, I'm sorry, in New Jersey, but that's just how it is. And it involves money.
Yeah. Well, I think it's all coming back to that. I think when you start down that road and you start taking money from less than honorable sources, eventually it's going to come back to you. And I think this year you're going to see that. And I think a lot of people in the administration are probably going to start floating resumes come November. I think there's going to be a big
swamp. Trump has got a big job ahead of him because he's got to literally clean the rats out of the corners of the room.
Oh.
He's got to turn on the lights. He's got to upset the bureaucracy. He's got to get rid of middle management people like Lois Lerner. He's got to get rid of Koskinen at the IRS. He's got to get all the Muslim Brotherhood representatives out of the West Wing of the White House.
See, and those are all pretty obvious. I mean, those folks have pretty much made it clear where they stand. I think he'll have no problem replacing them. It's the ones that, like you say, the middle management that he's going to
have
a big job replacing. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, as Jesse Ventura said in the movie The Predator, they're dug in like Alabama ticks.
Boy, they are, too. We've just opened the door and let them in.
Oh. Boy, unbelievable. Unbelievable. Yeah, they don't have to do anything violently over here because we're inviting them in.
Sure.
And they're sitting over there laughing like hell at us. Well, I mean, it's
amazing to me and shocking at the same time that we have allowed all these high-level positions to be filled with Muslims. And
not just, I mean, it's not just that it, you know, happens to be their religion. I mean, these guys are
See, I have a hard time calling it a religion.
I know, but they're Hamas guys. I mean, these are bad guys. And,
they're not. There's no question about that. I mean, the deputy mayor of Los Angeles under Villaraigosa, who was a member of CARE down in Southern California, he wound up under Janet Napolitano going on the advisory board to Homeland Security.
Right.
I mean, this is insanity. It is suicidal insanity.
Yep. And you know what? It gets back to the philosophy that they play the long game, and they just quietly creep in, and before you know it, they don't have to fire a shot.
You know what the Muslim Brotherhood people have always said out of Al-Azhar University in Cairo?
Tell me.
The West may have the watches, but we have the time.
Classic.
Yeah. And that's sad but true.
That is totally true. All right, we need
to take one
really quick break, and we'll come right back. We're chatting with Peter Friedman. We could do this all day. You know,
I'm here.
I know. It's crazy. We could just talk about this forever because there's a lot of it. His website is islamthreat.com. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. We'll be right back. That's a big yes right there. They would lie to us. All right, Peter. So we're watching what's going on in Europe. Obviously, they didn't stop their infiltration, I guess, and they're paying for it.
Well, they opened their arms and just let how many thousands and thousands of unscreened refugees come into Europe.
And let's be multicultural about it.
Yeah, and how long did it take before that came back and bit them? And now they're trying to reverse it. It's too late.
Let me give you a great quote to chew on for the rest of the program.
Hopefully it's not by George Will or Bill's head will explode.
I don't know whether you've ever heard of Colonel David Grossman. If not, go read his book. He was a Army Ranger for 20 years. He has been retired for about 17, 18 years. He trains law enforcement departments and everything. Anyway, he wrote two books. One's called On Combat. The other one's called On Killing. And he made a very interesting statement that will explain to people how people become radicalized and why they do what they do. And what's interesting is we haven't gotten any of them alive yet. And he writes, quote, "The enemy who fights to a noble death validates and affirms the killer's belief in his own nobility and the glory of his cause."
So true.
And if you think about that for a minute, and you think about Orlando, and you think about Dallas, and you think any one of these, the guy in Nice, that's the explanation. The enemy who fights to a noble death, in other words, he has read the Quran, he understands the religious obligations under Islam, if you're going to be a devout Islam for the faith, it validates and affirms the killer's belief in, number one, his own nobility, because the Quran says you will be noble if you do this, all right, and you will get immediately into paradise as a mujahideen, and the glory of his cause. So what is the cause? I mean, this says it all right there in that one statement.
When they convince themselves that what's in the Quran is true and dying for that cause is noble, you're not going to stop them.
They become noble as a result.
That's right.
The only way you can prevent
that is to keep them the heck out, because once they're here, it's going to happen I don't care how much security and how much how many laws we pass, they're coming. And once they're here, we have a problem.
Do you follow Sebastian Gorka?
Negative.
On TV, Dr. Sebastian Gorka. He is he's right in the front of this thing. He has written a new book. He teaches at the military, what is it, the Military Defense Institute. I mean, the guy is right on the cutting edge of this. And Gorka, in fact, predicted Dallas after Orlando. And he said, here's what's going to happen because they're related. They're related. You cannot separate the Islamist movement in America from the Black Lives Matter movement. And both of them are being funded in part by George Soros. If you do the research, you can connect the dots. And it is just amazing to see. Here, I'll give you some very interesting connect the dots. You remember Tim Geithner?
Oh, yeah.
Tim Geithner was the first Secretary of the Treasury under Obama.
Mm-hmm.
Tim Geithner's father, who is still alive at 87, 88 years old, I guess now, is Peter Franz Geithner, who was one of the directors of the Ford Foundation. Peter Franz Geithner was the man who was in charge of supervising the grant that was given to Obama's mother to study anthropology in Indonesia. Everything is 6 degrees of separation. Sometimes it's not even 6 degrees.
Yeah, they're just so tightly knit. I mean, it's...
they're in here like an Alabama tick.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the political incest is mind-boggling because everybody covers for everybody else. I mean, Loretta Lynch is nothing more than Eric Holder in a skirt.
Yeah, I think everybody's pretty clear on that.
Unbelievable. Well, and then I'd love to spend an hour with Rudy Giuliani, you know, who came out and said what a terrific person she was and fair and he worked with her, you know, before she was, you know, right after she was nominated, before she was confirmed. And I wonder if Rudy would say the same thing today.
No, I think a lot of them have come around. I mean, after that decision to not prosecute came out, I think a lot of them turned around and said, I think they realized, you know, who they were dealing with. I hope.
It's just, you know, for the last 25 years of my adult life, I've had to deal with the Clintons. And it's just, it's mind-boggling. It just is absolutely mind-boggling. And the problem is the kids that were born 20 years ago who now can vote are really not familiar with the Clinton crime syndicate.
No.
No, and the trail of dead bodies behind them. They're not familiar with Hillary Clinton defending the Black Panthers in the summer of 1971 here out in California working for Robert Truhaft and Doris Walker, who were the heads of the California Communist Party.
Wow.
You know, what? They're not familiar with the fact that she was on the, in 1974, she was on the Democratic side going after Richard Nixon on the Watergate committee as an attorney, a junior lawyer, and the head of the Watergate attorneys fired her for lying and forging documents. I mean, you know, this is craziness. People don't change.
No.
Well, I think with this administration, they've managed to take lying to a whole new level and almost made it okay. You know, it's our job.
It's beyond pathological.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's now our job to decide what we want to believe and what we don't want to believe. But I don't know. I think any time he opens his mouth, you have to assume it's a lie.
Especially if his lips are moving.
Yeah. But, you know, the things that he's done in the last 8 years, I mean, if you just go back to, the Reagan administration, just go back that far. You couldn't have got away with a tenth of what he's done and not been booted out of office. And now it's so commonplace. And I think Bill Clinton had a lot to do with that, with some of the shenanigans he pulled in the White House. It just made it okay to be deceitful until you get caught and then, just have some legal jargon and get out of it and move on and nobody cares.
Well, at this point, what difference does it make?
Exactly. Yeah. And that's what I mean.
Somebody had to say
it. It's so frustrating to have that level of deceit from our highest level of government. I mean, that's why people are just done with it.
The average American cannot suspend their disbelief. That comes directly from the movie Basic Instinct, if you've seen it.
Mm-hmm.
You have to imagine that some things are capable of happening in order to connect the dots. If you just totally ignore that or try to refute that because you're in denial, then you get exactly what you deserve. I have always told people, don't get upset with the elected official. Get upset with the people who elected them, because that official is a direct mirror image of the people who put them there.
Yeah, the best example I think is Nancy Pelosi. She wins with like what, 80% or something.
Yeah, and they still vote for her. We watched a movie last night. One of the quotes in there was, "Truth is like poetry, and most people hate poetry." And
there you go.
And isn't that the truth?
That is the truth.
People don't want to hear it. People don't want to hear it.
No. It's like the doctor, okay, who you go to because you have a pain on your left side of your abdomen, and the doctor does all kinds of tests, and do you really want to hear from the doctor you have pancreatic cancer?
Oh, heck no.
You know, the movie, a great film called A Good Year. I don't know if you saw that, with Albert Finney. And Albert Finney says, you know something? He says, I was listening to my doctor until all of a sudden my doctor started talking about the weather, and then I knew I was terminal.
Yeah. You know, that's about
That's it. When it got bad.
That's exactly. Exactly. That's when I knew that I was in real trouble, because he wasn't telling me the truth anymore. People don't want to hear the truth. It's like... Jack Nicholson and Tom Cruise and A Few Good Men.
Yeah.
Tell me the truth. You can't handle the truth.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, this information is not secret. It's been out there for a long time. You've been talking about this for a long time. There's a ton written about it. I think now you're looking at worldwide the result of having all these people, and yet we still have people who think, oh, you know what? These guys, they're just looking for a better life. It's just a coincidence that all the refugees that, you know, the vast majority are 20-year-old, you know, men that are totally able to work.
And if the German Jews had taken Mein Kampf seriously after Hitler wrote it in 1927, and do you know what the second most widely read book in the Middle East is?
Mein Kampf?
The Quran's the first. Mein Kampf.
Oh, jeez.
You ask... Yeah. You asked me earlier about the Germans and the Nazis. Arabs, the Muslims have always been on the side of the Germans in the Franco-Prussian War, 1870, 1914, and especially during World War II, because if you go and you Google Haji Amin al-Husseini, who was the uncle, by the way, of Yasser Arafat, in 1941, al-Husseini, who was the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, met with Hitler in Berlin. There's a bunch of pictures on Google under images of al-Husseini and Hitler. Very well-known piece of history. And Husseini, at that point in Hitler in Berlin in 1941, said, when you're done exterminating the Jews in Europe, would you please send your SS to the Middle East so we can finish the job? To show his good faith, al-Husseini recruited two regiments of Bosnian Muslims and gave them to the Waffen-SS to exterminate Jews in Czechoslovakia and Romania. And all the pictures are there. They're all there. This is history. And this has been going on for over 100 years. Armenian Genocide. If you talk about the Armenian Genocide in Turkey today, you will go to prison. Because Erdogan has issued a law that says anybody that tries to relate the Ottoman Turks with the slaughter from 1896 to 1916 in Armenia of over a million Armenian Christians, we don't want that as part of our Turkish history. And again, Obama,
He didn't support the Green Movement in Iran in 2009, and he didn't support the attempted overthrow 2 weeks ago of Erdogan in Turkey, and I'm telling you, we are going to pay dearly for that.
Yeah, that was a huge mistake. Huge mistake. And he came right out during the coup.
And said people should stand with their president.
Yeah, yeah.
The democratically elected president. Imagine in 1932, Roosevelt coming out and saying, no, Germans, you should stand with Hitler. He is the elected president, and you guys elected him, and it was a democratic election. Imagine 1941, December 8th, 1941, if FDR, in giving his famous We Have Nothing to Fear But Fear Ourselves speech, had come out and said, you know, the Japanese people are really lovely people, and the majority of the Japanese military don't mean any harm to anybody, but the military has been hijacked by radicals like Tojo and Hirohito. Can you imagine that?
Yeah. See, that's what I mean. Administration has just brainwashed people into believing these lies. And maybe they don't believe them, but they make it's okay. It's okay that they're lying.
Moreover than that, they've done an excellent job at silencing the opposition. And that,
in Arabic, is called taqiya.
The silencing the opposition part?
Yeah, taqiya. It's religious deception. You'll find it in the Quran and the Hadith.
Oh. Well, there's a plan.
Maybe that's why Obama's so good at it.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. We need to take one really quick break, and then we're going to come back and finish out the top of the hour with Peter Friedman. And we've requested an interview with Dr. Gorka, by the way, while we were chatting here. So we'll see if that comes around, because that would be fantastic. Be right back.
Tell him hello for me.
Will do.
Towers fail. We had neighbors still inside, going through a living hell. And we vowed to get the ones behind Bin Laden. Have you forgotten?
Well, apparently we have, because we have bunches of them in the White House now. So, Peter, where do you think we're headed with all this, besides someplace bad?
Well, I'll tell you. We could do another 2 hours. Please email me your address so I can send you a copy of my book.
Doing it.
Because the majority of everything that we have discussed during this program is really contained in there and will answer all these questions. There's 36 chapters in it. There's 220 pages, and the majority of those chapters are responses to questions that people have asked me after hearing a presentation.
Now, give us the name of the book and where we can get it.
You can get it right on my website, IslamThreat.com. Just click on the icon on the top. There's four items right on the top, and it's the right one that says a collection of articles, 36 articles.
Nice. All right. We will I'll post that a little bit more prominently.
You know, it's $15 postpaid anywhere in the country.
Nice. So what do you think? You know, can Europe ever get out from under this?
No.
I don't think so either. I think they're kind of doomed.
No. They're too dug in. The British, to their credit, thank God they live on an island, to their credit, you know, they got out of the European Union, which means that people with forged passports can't come into Britain.
Unfortunately, they've had their gates open for a long time, and to clean it up now is going to be...
Mosque. I spent a lot of time in the last 40 years over there, and I got to tell you, you don't go anywhere in North London, anywhere near the Finsbury Mosque. That's where that crazy Imam Anjem Chowdhury that periodically Sean Hannity has on his program, preaches from. And then you have, if you remember 4 or 5 years ago, you had Lee Rigby, who was the military drummer. And the guy was walking home.
Oh, yeah.
In South London, and the two... North African guys came up and slaughtered the guy, and the guy held up the bloody machete right in London.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, right, on, yeah. Right on film, yeah.
If you go to Harrods today, all you see is hijabs.
Well, they have let Sharia law control that section,
yes,
of London, and I mean, they've got a battle on their hands.
That.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, let me take it a step further, because in the United States now, there have been 52 litigations in 26 states in the United States of America that have been arbitrated using Sharia.
Wow.
And then you get that moron Ginsburg on the Supreme Court, who in fact told Iraq, please don't base your constitution on our constitution here in America, because it doesn't protect human rights. And this is craziness.
She's gone around the bend.
The main reason we've got to elect Donald Trump is for the Supreme Court. Otherwise, we're screwed.
Yeah.
That's it. The game is over, because Hillary will put more crazy people like Kagan and Sotomayor on there, and we're in trouble. Do you know, Elena Kagan wrote her senior thesis on the benefits of socialism in New York. I'll send it to you. You can pull it up on the internet.
The benefits of socialism in New York?
Yes.
What was it, a half page?
It was three sentences.
You know, it's like Margaret Thatcher once said that, you know, socialism is wonderful until the government runs out of other people's money.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, this is free college for everybody? Seriously?
Yeah. And
you know,
what's sad is the younger demographic is buying into all this, and we've got to shut this stuff down.
Well, it's the public school system.
Yeah, yeah, Peter, we need to have you back. We need to have you back again.
Check your calendar. What are you doing? What are you doing next Sunday?
I'll be with you if you want me to.
We should just continue the dialogue if you're up for it.
So, absolutely.
Fantastic.
Let me know. I'll be very happy to. Send me an email.
All right, doing it.
Yeah, we're out of time, but boy, we need to do it.
So for all those people out there that are thinking, geez, I wish my friend or my family heard this, hey, we'll do it again next week. New stuff.
Send me your address. I will FedEx the book to you, so you'll have it there for next week.
Perfect.
Super.
Our guest, Peter Friedman, can't ask for more.
Thank you very much, Peter.
A pleasure.
Check his website, IslamThreat.com, and all of it is on ours, of course, along with a commercial-free archive here shortly. And that is at WeThePeopleRadio.us. See you next week.